he said, reaching over and snagging what looked like a ham sandwich off his desk and taking a huge bite.
"I'm listening," I replied, watching him mechanically chew. The guy deserved a last meal.
"If you don't kill me, I'll help you get out of here."
He swallowed the bite and looked up at me like an expectant puppy.
"Deal?"
"How do you know I want to get out of here?" I asked, raising an eyebrow.
"Seriously, bro?"
the guy said, giving me a look that suggested he wasn't worried about me killing him anymore. It was weird, because I was pretty sure my facial expression hadn't changed.
"I know you broke into this place to get Pierce."
He pointed to a screen where a guy dressed in a really expensive suit and surrounded by guards with M16s was heading toward an airplane hangar.
"It's why I'm here tonight. I'll use my considerable skills to help you reach him before he flies off into the wild blue yonder."
"And I believe you'll do this, why? If you help me, there's exactly zero chance Pierce won't kill you."
I stared at the screen, and my heart practically leapt into my throat when I realized Ricky was among the guards. She was wearing what looked like a straitjacket and bound in chains that glinted silver in the moonlight.
"He can't do that if he's dead."
The guy gestured around the room.
"He left me here alone to deal with you. There's not even one guard."
All in all, it wasn't a bad point. Being left to die had a way of making people hate you.
"If you betray me, I will come back and kill you," I said, making my "I'm totally capable of tearing out your larynx with my teeth" face at him.
"I have no doubt of that, Mr. Brennan."
He tapped a manila folder buried under a plethora of monster cans.
"It's in the file."
"What else is in the file?" I asked, reaching out for it.
Thus far, the only thing I knew about my past had been limited to a couple spotty visions. If these people had information on me, it was a hell of a lot more than I had.
"Psych evaluations on you since you got your arm."
He made like he was going to point at my demonic flesh, but stopped himself.
"It's why Pierce is leaving with the girl. That file says you will kill him and anyone else who gets in your way."
He scooted his chair back until it touched the desk.
"Look how out of your way I am."
He smiled shakily. I glanced from the file to him and back again.
"So it has nothing about my past?"
"As far as my information goes, you didn't exist before yesterday."
He swallowed like he was afraid his words would get him shot or tortured. Maybe they would have, but judging by the screens, I didn't have time to spend dicking with him, especially since he was probably right. He was some flunky. He probably didn't know anything about me, because if he did, I was pretty sure he'd tell me.
"Give me your radio. If anything stupid happens, I want you to stop it, or I'm going to come back."
I shoved the M16's barrel against his forehead and pressed it into the flesh to leave a mark.
"Do you understand?"
He started to nod, stopped himself, and swallowed hard.
"Yes, Mr. Brennan."
He swallowed again.
"The radios are over there. I'll put it on Channel 6. No one usually goes past Channel 3, so you'll be okay. It also has a vibrating option to get your attention. I'll use it if you don't respond and something bad is coming."
"Sounds like a plan."
I turned and grabbed the radio. It was a pretty standard walkie-talkie with an earpiece. I clipped it to my ear and pocketed the rest of the device. I held out my hand to the fat black man.
"Hi, I'm Mac Brennan. Pleased to meet you."
He stared at my hand for a moment before reaching out and taking it in a rather feeble, oily grip.
"Todd. Todd Barnes."
"Well, Todd, how do I get to that bridge?"
I wiped my hand on my jeans before pointing at the screen with the zombies and the werewolves.
"I need to talk to the one with the red hair. So don't kill him, okay?"
Is this a no-maiming thing, or is that okay?
He asked, spinning around in his chair so he was facing the keyboard. He took quick stock of the situation, and his hands flew over the keys. For a moment, it did look like the werewolves might win. But like magic, the zombies started taking them down. It was pretty crazy how quickly the tables had turned.
"Maim away,"
I replied as the zombies quickly regained the upper hand and forced the werewolves back along the platform, so it seemed like the werewolves were walking the plank. Hell, maybe that had been the idea.
"Nice job, by the way." "I have Uber Micro," he replied, already reaching for his headphones.
I wasn't sure how I felt about him, but I decided to play this one by ear. If he could help me, great. If not, well, there weren't that many zombies left, and I was a pretty good shot.
"One more thing," I said, glancing at him as I approached the exit, determined to find Pierce and kill him in a brutal, needlessly violent way. "Don't let them fly away with Ricky. Or else..." "The female werewolf? I'll do my best," he said, looking over and smiling at me. "Thanks for not killing me." "The night's still young."
I pushed through the door, hoping the nerd in the cheese-covered sweatpants could keep them from escaping with Ricky. I gave it 50-50 odds. Chapter 26. Thanks to Todd directing me through the complex, I arrived on the surface a few minutes later without having to fight even a single guard or monster. I was sort of glad, too, because I hadn't had to climb up the elevator shaft outside the tech center. I mean, I'd have done it, but I was glad to have avoided it. The likelihood Murphy would smack me like a bitch in that situation was too high to fathom. I emerged on the opposite side of the shark tank and smiled. All the werewolves appeared to have been incapacitated. A horde of zombies stood in the midst of the fallen werewolves milling about like grotesque, decaying guards. Evidently, Todd was very good at his job. It made me wonder how I'd been able to overcome the zombies. Except I hadn't, really. They'd mostly just wanted Ricky, and if I hadn't released the werewolves, I'd have never made it out of the wine cellar. When none of the zombies tried to gobble me whole, I sprinted across the platform, trying my best to avoid stepping in the slimy puddles of ichor. Bobby was sitting against one of the glass walls of the bridge over the platform, trying to stuff his guts back into his abdomen. It was sort of funny, because there was a big zombie poking him in the side of the head over and over. As I approached, it bared its teeth at me.
"I'll take it from here," I said, and the zombie's face went slack and empty.
The creature turned on its heel and walked off toward the other werewolves, none of whom was dead. They were only unconscious or maimed, but they'd all lived, and knowing their healing powers, after visiting a hometown buffet, they'd be as good as new. How nice of Todd.
"Hello," I called, squatting down next to Bobby so the two of us were eye to eye. His left arm had been gnawed nearly to the bone, and his right eye was drifting to the side in a way that made me think he'd broken some important muscles in his face.
"Remember me? I'm the guy you sucker-punched and left in a room full of monsters with a bomb strapped to his chest."
"How are you here?"
Bobby slurred, his words mashing together in a way that made me think concussion.
"You're supposed to be locked away."
"Focus,"
I smacked him upside the head.
"Why did you do it, Bobby?"
"Because you're accursed."
He nodded at me like it was answer enough.
"If you're here with Ricky, it means she owes you something or she likes you."
He stretched out the word like, but I wasn't sure if that was because his brain was half bashed in or because he was being cute. I poked him in his gaping abdomen wound anyway. Screw the benefit of the doubt. He screamed, and the sound made me feel bad in a why-am-I-enjoying-causing-him-pain sort of way, so I stopped before I did more. I pushed it out of my mind and followed my own advice. I focused on Bobby.
"What's that got to do with anything?" I asked, wondering why I was bothering with Bobby at all.
I ought to be racing toward Pierce, but instead I was here with this jackass. It wasn't even a revenge thing, really. If it had been that, I'd have just shot him in the face and moved on. No, it was something I couldn't put into words. I needed to know why he'd done it.
Ricky never had the best taste in guys.
His gnawed hand flopped in my general direction, like a dying fish.
You're not a good guy. I know that better than anyone. You're all sorts of fucked in the head. You were bad for her even before you hooked up with Lucifer.
I'm fucked in the head? I cried, filled with the sudden urge to kick his teeth into his brain.
You strapped a bomb to my chest. You snuck into my room when I was a little kid to stab me to death, you stupid fuck!
He shook his head, and it wobbled like one of those bobblehead dolls.
If you think I'd let my sister anywhere near you, you're on drugs!
He leaned his head back against the glass. It made a none-too-pleasant squishing sound.
Right now, your sister is being brought to a plane by Pierce Ambrose. He'll take her away and do horrible things to her.
I grabbed him by his stupid red hair and dragged him to his feet. It was harder to do than I expected, since even emaciated, I was pretty sure he weighed more than me.
I'm the only one who can save her. So why are you here then, Mac?
He smiled at me, revealing a mouthful of crimson teeth.
You should be going after her, but you're not. You're messing with me.
Why?
If you're such a hero, why are you here?
You know, I have no idea, I shrugged. I guess I wanted to know why you did it.
It's because you want me to approve of you.
He smiled at me in that same douchebag way he had when he was a kid making one of my friends eat a worm.
Nah, I'm far past wanting your approval, Bobby. Far past that.
I shook my head and tried to push down the urge to tear him limb from limb. No matter his intentions, he'd cost me valuable time.
I just wanted to know why you did it. I can sort of respect the Big Brother protection racket. But if you'd had another reason, well, I might not be so lenient.
Then, because I had no soul, I pushed him backward over the railing. He fell toward the shark tank, and just as his legs were about to go over the railing, I grabbed hold of his ankles. His sudden stop nearly jerked my arms from their socket, but I held on anyway.
But if you ever do something like that again, you'll be sleeping with the fishes. Capiche?
He made a half-strangled squawk I didn't understand, but that could have been because he was too busy watching his blood hit the water. Huge dark shapes swarmed through the tank beneath him, and I wondered idly how far sharks could leap out of the water. Hopefully not far enough to eat him. If they could, I'd sort of feel bad, since I didn't want to kill him. Ricky would probably frown on me doing so, especially since she'd braved Pierce to try to save him. I let out a sigh. It was Bobby's lucky day, because even without being here, his sister was making me a better person. But not that much better. I turned toward the big, placid zombie who had been poking Bobby and gestured for it to come over.
Can you hold him here for about 20 minutes? Maybe if he's upside down for a while, the blood will rush to his brain, and he'll get smarter.
The zombie gave me a thumbs up and grabbed the werewolf's ankle. I let go, and Bobby hung there upside down over the shark tank with a look of hatred and fear on his face.
You can't leave me like this, Mac! He cried, staring into the zombie's impassive, rotting face.
Don't worry. I know this guy. I patted the zombie's shoulder. He won't let you die.
Then I threw up the devil horns and walked down the bridge toward where the runway was supposed to be.
Probably.
Chapter 27. I sprinted across the park, barely cognizant of the zombies taking down supernatural who's-a-what's-its all around me, while Todd gave me directions. I was starting to like the guy more and more with each passing moment, and not just because a zombie had body-checked a guard about to shoot me from the bushes as I approached the airport gate. That was just a bonus. Zombies milled across the runway beyond the heavy wrought iron separating the private airstrip from the rest of the park. The zombies, along with a bunch of flying bat creatures who were very interested in the plane's engines, seemed to have kept the Gulfstream G650 from leaving. Even still, I could tell it wouldn't be grounded for long. A whole slew of guards raced down the runway in a Hummer outfitted with a Browning M5. They were busily mowing down the mindless, shambling horde, while two sets of three guards on foot headed toward the wings of the Gulfstream.
"The zombies aren't being super effective," I muttered into the radio as the gate in front of me unlocked with a flash of green lights.
I pushed through it, glad I had my own super hacker at the helm, even if his zombies seemed relatively useless.
"About that, there's some sort of disruptor on the plane that extends around it about 50 feet in every direction. I'm not sure if they know I'm using the zombies to thwart them, or if it's just a normal defense mechanism they've turned on as part of some other system, but it's eliminating my ability to control them."
Todd said something else, but I didn't catch it, because the guards blasted their flamethrowers in the general direction of the engines. The black bat things shrieked loud enough to shatter my hearing from several hundred yards away. They took flight in one huge black cloud, swarming upward and circling like some kind of strange bird of prey, before disappearing into the clouds. The plane's engines roared to life, and it started forward while the guards scrambled to get out of the way. While they didn't seem worried about being left behind, they did seem to be worried about the nearly 50 zombies advancing on them from the shadows like they were following along the perimeter of a receding field. They started firing at the zombies, who could do nothing much with so much distance between them. As the undead horde fell, what I could only describe as a giant tree monster smashed through the gate nearest them and shambled forward with several more like it trailing behind. Evidently, it was either undeterred by the zombie repellent field, or it wasn't concerned. I wasn't sure where the creatures had come from, but I was glad they weren't focused on me.
"What are those?" I cried as I sprinted toward the plane.
It was starting to move now, and there was no way I was going to catch it on foot. Still, I had to try, even though I had no idea what I was going to do even if I caught it. I had half a mind to try to take out the engines with Hellfire, but something told me that might end very badly for Ricky, assuming she was still alive.
"Ents," Todd replied,
a note of smug satisfaction in his voice.
"They're for emergencies only, but I decided I really wanted to deploy my heavy units."
I was about to yell at him for treating this like a game, except for him, it sort of was. Besides, if he wanted to play plants versus zombies versus guards, well, I could live with that. Hopefully. The Gulfstream, on the other hand, was getting away, and the pilot didn't seem particularly worried about running over zombies, which was sort of understandable. I wouldn't care either, unless they broke the plane or prevented it from taking off. Then I'd care a lot.
"I don't suppose you have anything to stop the plane,"
I cried, sprinting so hard my lungs felt like they were going to explode. It was no use. The Gulfstream would be a speck in the sky long before I even reached where it was now.
"No,"
Todd replied before he broke into a huge screaming fit.
"No, no, no!"
The sound of gunfire exploded through the radio, and the line went dead. A moment later, all the zombies and the two still upright Ents stopped moving.
Damn. "Mr. Brennan," said a husky, oily voice from the other end of the radio. "This is Pierce Ambrose. Cease your attack, or I'll kill your friend, Todd."
"What makes you think I care even slightly about Todd?"
I screamed into the microphone while throwing out my hand and concentrating.
"It was worth a shot."
The line went dead. I gritted my teeth.
"I'll get him for you, Todd,"
I growled and gathered all my magic. I flung it toward the Gulfstream, trying to visualize exactly how I'd used it during my fight with Van. My vision went hazy as oily red sludge sprang from my tattoos and shot out toward the plane. A reed-thin tendril struck the outer shell of the G650 with flare of scarlet light. I had half a second to realize I'd succeeded before I was pulled off my feet and dragged toward the now ascending plane. Indescribable pain exploded through my arm as I was jerked upward into the air. I'm pretty sure I'd have been ripped to shreds by the runway if the tentacle hadn't snapped me off the ground and into the air before I really picked up speed. As it was, I managed to only lose a single shoe. It was a pity, since I'd rather liked that boot, but I could get a new one. Coincidentally, that was when I realized I was staring at the quickly receding ground, whereupon I also realized I was attached to a goddamned airplane by a thin tendril of magic as it climbed up into the wild blue yonder. I fought the urge to piss myself, and instead focused on retracting my tentacle. The line snapped taut, jerking me forward toward the plane. Which was good, because I disliked flying through space, but bad, because I slammed into the metal skin of the G650 hard enough to rattle my teeth. "Okay, Mac. Think," I muttered to myself as my right hand grabbed onto the plane and held me there like I was Spider-Man. "How the hell are you going to get inside?" The door inside was only about a foot away, but I had no idea how I was going to get it open, since I couldn't use my magic to unlock it. If I did, I'd risk falling 1,000 feet to the earth. That seemed like a bad idea, sans parachute. Screw it. I put the barrel of the M16 to the window above me and fired. The bullets punctured the thin glass in a shriek. I released my hold on the gun, letting it catch on the strap around my shoulder, and shoved my left arm inside, reaching in to grab hold of the seatbelt. As I hoisted myself up, I saw two guards crouching for cover. But that wouldn't last long. Shit was already starting to go nuts inside the cabin as the pilot tried to compensate for the added friction of the busted window. "Here goes nothing," I said, and let go of the magic sticking me to the side of the plane. The sudden strain on my left hand was nearly enough to rip my arm off my entire body. But there was no way around it. I gritted my teeth and reached out for the door with my right hand. The moment my fingers touched the door, I cried, "Rosero!" The door opened in a flash of crimson light before getting completely ripped off the plane. I managed to duck out of the way as it went flying. The inside of the plane turned into a wind tunnel of doom, sucking everything out the door while I used another blast of tentacle magic to pull myself inside. It worked, but momentum, being the bitch that she is, slammed me into the far wall just as one of the guards slammed his hand on a huge button beside their station. As I crumpled to the floor behind a pair of custom leather seats, little Tweety birds flapped around my skull. Armored metal sheets came crashing down over the window and the door, sealing off the airplane before more damage could be done. Evidently, this plane had been outfitted with extras. Good to know. The sound of the two guards rushing toward me was barely audible over the wind whipping around the cabin, and part of me wondered why they weren't shooting at me. Was it because we were in a plane? Was it bad to shoot inside of planes? It was time to find out. A grin spread out on my lips as I came up firing my M16 until it clicked empty. The hail of bullets caught the guards in their chests, knocking them from their feet. I was already moving toward the door on the far end of the cabin. I wasn't sure if it was normal for G650s to have two separate rooms, but this one did. I scooped up one of the fallen M16s, and as I stood up, a girl dressed like a slutty version of Princess Jasmine from Aladdin stepped between me and the door on the far side of the plane. She was beautiful in that Kansas prom queen sort of way, with long blonde hair and cornflower blue eyes. Her hands were curled into white-knuckled fists, and her entire 4-foot-8-inch body trembled with barely controlled fury. "Stop," she said in a half-strangled, barely controlled snarl. "I don't want to kill you." She bit her lip hard as a wave of darkness swam through her eyes, and even though it seemed like she was fighting it with everything in her, she raised her trembling fists, took a step toward me. "What's going on?" I asked, pointing my M16 at her face. I had no idea who she was, but something about her was definitely off. She took another step, and my urge to shoot her so I could burst into the room beyond and rescue Ricky was nearly overwhelming. To be perfectly honest, I'm not sure why I didn't squeeze the trigger of my M16. Actually, that wasn't true. I knew why. It was because even though she seemed like a sack of crazy, something about her struck me as helpless. "Pierce sent me out here to stop you," she said, and her words were breathless and angry. "I have to do what he says." She swallowed hard as amber swirled up in her perfect blue eyes. "He is my alpha. I have no choice."
"What do you mean you have to do what he says?" I said, confusion filling my voice. "He can't make you do anything."
"He can. He is my alpha, my dominant. He can make me do anything he wants." She shook her head, and as she did so, I realized tears were gathering in the corners of her eyes. "Even now, I can feel his will like a warm breath on the back of my neck. It's all I can do to not give in and tear you asunder."
She swallowed hard, and things began to writhe beneath her flesh. She was going to transform any second.
"You think I want to be dressed like this?"
It was a reasonable point. I didn't know many women who would want to model their normal mode of dress after the slutty version of a Disney character. Somehow, her dilemma made me want to make Pierce pay even more. I hadn't even thought that was possible.
"You really can't fight it?" I asked, bringing the M16 up and sighting it on her.
I didn't want to shoot her, but I was really sure she wasn't going to give me a choice. Mind controlled or not, if she came at me, I was putting her down, even if it made me hate myself.
"You don't understand. When I'm with Pierce, everything in me wants to please him, to make him happy. I can't imagine not wanting it to be that way."
She took another step forward so the barrel of my gun was pressed between her barely concealed breasts.
"The only reason I can even think is because Ricky is fighting him, but that will end soon. Then she'll be like me. Just a mindless prop and part-time sex puppet."
The thought of Pierce making Ricky fall head over heels for him via mind control made revulsion and hatred swell inside me until I was about to burst. I couldn't let that happen. I wouldn't let that happen. Pierce Ambrose was going to die.
"That's not going to happen to Ricky," I said before unloading the M16 into her chest.
The bullets weren't silver, so they didn't kill her, but they certainly threw her backward in a spray of blood and bone. She hit the ground like a broken doll and lay there. Her body was already working to sew itself back together, but it would take time. Still, if she was anything like Ricky, I didn't have long. I dropped the empty M16 and picked up the other guard's still partially full one. It wasn't like he was using it anyway.
"I hope you're right,"
she whispered as I stepped past her and hit the button on the side of the door.
"Either way, when I get up, I'm going to try to kill you."
I would have turned to her, would have offered her some kind of assurance, but the door in front of me opened, revealing a room straight out of an Arabian movie. It was filled with lush pillows, with at least 5 scantily clad women lounging upon them. Pierce stood toward the back, one arm around Ricky's neck. Her face was twisted in rage and fear, while a smug smile filled his goateed face. The son of a bitch was using her as a human shield.
"You're just in time to see her break, Mac. Once she does, I'll have the exquisite pleasure of watching her gut you."
He had one of those spoiled rich kid voices, the kind I could picture calling home to his oil tycoon father and wanting another Ferrari because he needed only one more to complete the palette of colors he already owned. Similar to the girl I just blasted in the chest, Ricky was dressed in a pair of see-through pink pants and a matching top that left little to the imagination. I fought the urge to look away, because if I did, I was pretty sure Pierce would shoot me with the Beretta in his hand. Then again, he was probably going to do that anyway. A wave of fury washed over me, distilling everything down to his stupid, smug face. I was going to tear his goddamned head off. How can you do this to these women? I snarled, barely able to recognize my own voice. I honestly hadn't been sure what to expect from Pierce Ambrose, being that I'd never actually seen the man before. But what I saw fit the bill of an oily, super-rich prick who desperately needed to get shot in the face. He wore one of those custom black suits from Milan, had perfectly tanned olive skin, and probably waxed his chest.
This is my right as Alpha.
His dark eyes flashed with amusement as he leveled the gun at me. Those eyes told me everything I needed to know about him. He always got what he wanted. Well, it was time to change that.
Your right as Alpha can go fuck itself, I snarled as the blank-faced girls surrounding us stood as one, and I suddenly realized I was in a room with 5 female werewolves who were all supposed to be alphas in their own right, and somehow I didn't think my borrowed M16 was loaded with silver. This was going to get really bad, really fast.
You can think whatever you want, but they are mine to do with as I wish.
Pierce shrugged and gestured insolently at me with his gun.
And what I wish is for them to kill you. Violently.
I'm a touch harder to kill than you'd think, I said, and as the closest girl edged toward me, I threw a handful of hellfire at Pierce.
He ducked, dropping Ricky in the process, which was what I'd hoped for since I was already sprinting toward them. If I got to her, I could get us out of here. I wasn't sure how exactly, but I was confident that part would come to me. The fireball hit the section of plane behind Pierce and blew out the wall of the plane. Almost immediately, we listed sharply, and unfortunately, I lost my balance and went careening toward the opening in the wall along with everyone else. Stupid wind tunnel effect. My M16 went flying from my hand as I slid across the plane and crashed into the cushioned wall. As everyone scrambled to grab onto something so they wouldn't get sucked outside, I tried to get my bearings, but my vision was a little too blurry, and the floor a little too unsteady. Not that it mattered. Even if the pilots could land a plane with a hole in it, there was no way I was letting Pierce off this plane alive. If it came down to it, I'd take him, and everyone else, down with the ship. I just needed a way to make sure Ricky was safe first. Admittedly, the thought of killing all these women pained me, but not that much. If they were the price I needed to pay to take down Pierce, I'd pay it gladly. Mac, Ricky called from across the plane. She was on her hands and knees near Pierce, who was already leveling his Beretta at me. He had his other hand on the couch, holding himself steady in a truly amazing show of strength.
Make your phone call.
With those words, Ricky threw herself backward. Her shoulder slammed into Pierce as he fired. The bullet flew by my head and buried itself in the wall behind me as the two of them tumbled through the opening I'd rent in the plane and disappeared from view.
No!
I screamed, and even though it was the stupidest thing I'd ever done, I rushed toward the opening. As I did so, one of the women grabbed hold of me, stopping me before I could be sucked outside the plane. She didn't seem very old, maybe 16 or 17, and something about seeing her dressed the way she was made me physically ill. When the women had rose as one, their faces had held certain blankness I hadn't really registered, but as this girl looked at me, I saw recognition fill her features. Even a girl this young wasn't safe from the mind control. The thought made my blood turn to ice.
They're both as good as dead. Even a werewolf cannot survive a fall from this high,
she said as I grabbed the parachute off the wall next to her before throwing off her steely grip.
Then I'll just have to catch her before the sudden stop at the bottom, I cried, leaping out after her anyway.
Chapter 28. I slung on the parachute as I careened down through the air, thankful the straps went on easily enough, and the wind didn't tear it from my hands. I snapped the buckles into place and cinched on the straps,
tightening them as best I could before lining my body up like a torpedo and heading straight for the flailing forms of Ricky and Pierce. They weren't much farther down than me, only about 30 meters or so, but that might as well have been a lifetime in the air. It was a little weird because it felt like I was falling forever, despite the fact that it had been less than a second since I'd leapt from the G-650. As I torpedoed downward toward them, I tried to figure out how high up we were. If I had to guess, we were somewhere around 3,000 feet in the air, well above the 2,500 feet most recreational divers jumped at. I was pretty sure I could save us both if I got to her before about 1,000 feet, but anything after that would be pushing it, since I wasn't using a base jumping rig designed to deploy quickly, and I had no idea how this chute was packed. Hell, for all I knew, it wouldn't open at all. Ricky saw me then, and her entire body rippled with shock. Pierce must have seen me at the same time, because he wrapped himself around Ricky like an octopus. I got the impression they had been fighting to keep from being the one on the bottom, as though it would matter. But now Pierce had changed course. He just wanted to take Ricky with him. His gun came up and he fired at me. The bullet streamed by me, and I shut my eyes for a second, trying to calm myself, even though I was falling through the sky a couple thousand feet above the earth. Another bullet whistled by me, and I gritted my teeth. My eyes snapped open. I was only 10 meters away now. As Pierce lined up his next shot, Ricky elbowed the smug bastard in the jaw. His head snapped to the side, and what looked like teeth burst from his lips. Ricky struggled, trying to throw the man off as he put the gun to her side and emptied 2 quick shots into her abdomen. Blood burst out of her body, spraying across the horizon as a cry of rage tore from my lips. Ricky stopped struggling, her body going mostly limp in his grip, as silver light flared from the wound. The bastard was using silver. Ricky couldn't heal it. "Ignis!" I cried before I could stop myself from trying to throw fire at my adversary while he was using Ricky as a human shield. Hellfire exploded from my palm as I flung my hand outward toward him. The fireball streamed through the air, catching Pierce's gun hand as he tried to line up another shot, and damn near blew his entire arm off. A scream of pain burst from his ragged throat, and he lost his grip on Ricky. Their 2 bodies drifted apart, and I redoubled my effort to catch her. We were closing in on what seemed like 2,000 feet at an alarming rate. There wasn't much time left. The ground was rushing toward me faster than I could really comprehend. Ricky's eyes were open, and her face was a mask of pain. Even still, she reached out toward me with one hand, while trying to staunch the bleeding with the other. "Almost there, Ricky," I cried, stretching my hand toward hers. My fingers brushed against her hand as Pierce caught hold of her left ankle. He jerked her violently away. She went tumbling down behind him. "Nice try, Mac," he said, grinning at me. "But we're all going to die here." He pulled another gun from a holster beneath his jacket and aimed it at me. He was so close there was no way he could miss, and worse still, Ricky was actually behind him now, blocked from my view. I knew Pierce was trying to keep me from reaching her with time to pull the parachute, and was now willing to sacrifice himself to make sure they both died. But something about him blocking me from her with his body made everything in me go cold and dark. "Or you can just die," I cried, snatching the knife from my ankle holster and throwing it at him in one smooth motion. The silver blade caught him in the shoulder as he pulled the trigger. His bullet hit me in the right side of the chest. Breath wouldn't come as the weapon slipped from his finger and fell. I tried to ignore the pain in my chest, tried to ignore how I couldn't breathe, and instead called up one last handful of hellfire. My vision went spotty and dark as I threw it at Pierce with everything I had left. The blast hit him in the chest, sending him rocketing down through the air past Ricky's tumbling body like a comet. Air wouldn't come. My vision was fading, but I fought it as best I could. Ricky was only a few inches away now. I could reach her. I had to reach her. Her hand came up. Her scarlet fingers reached for mine. Blood splattered across my face, but I wasn't quite sure who it came from, me or her. Our hands touched, and the moment they did, I seized her wrist. Her warmth surged through me as I pulled her up into my body and wrapped my legs around her waist.
"Hang on," I cried, and tore open the cord on the parachute.
It didn't open. Instead, the cord came free in my hand. Had one of Pierce's shots damaged it? God, I was really starting to hate that guy. The ground below surged up toward us, and I watched in horror as we got closer to what I judged was the 1,500-foot mark. I jerked the emergency cord. The parachute opened, but as it did so, it seemed to get tangled. It opened, but not all the way, and even though it jerked us upward, it didn't slow us nearly enough. If we'd been higher up, it might have worked, but at this distance we were going way too fast for any kind of survivable landing without the full chute. I tried to breathe, tried to suck in a single breath, but I couldn't. Ricky's arms wrapped around me, and I felt her pull me close as the strained parachute started to tear off the straps.
"It's okay, Mac. You tried, and I love that you did."
She kissed me, pressing her lips against mine as a strap ripped free, and we tumbled into a spin. I wound up upside down, her clinging to me like it'd somehow keep us from splattering across the pavement below. 500 feet.
"It's not okay," I wheezed, pointing my right hand up toward the parachute. There was no way I was going to let her die. Blood oozed from a hole in the right side of my chest. Was that why I couldn't breathe? I pushed the thought out of my head and concentrated. If I was going to die, it wasn't going to be from a gunshot. That was for sure.
"Hang on.
What are you doing, Mac?"
Ricky cried as my black skin went bone white and my tattoos faded to near obscurity.
"Saving you," I murmured, but my words were lost in the torrent of the wind whipping around us.
Flames leapt from my fingers. Hellfire danced in my palm directly beneath the open part of the parachute. 300 feet. The air above me superheated and we slowed. The flames in my hand flickered into dying embers as darkness encroached upon my vision from all sides. Still, I held on to that flame. I couldn't see, couldn't breathe. The only thing I felt was Ricky's hand clutching mine as we fell, and still I poured every ounce of strength into that flame in my palm, trying desperately to slow our descent by turning the parachute into a makeshift hot air balloon.
"Mac, you need to stop!"
Ricky screamed, but her panic-filled voice sounded so distant I could barely hear it. I wasn't sure why she was telling me to stop, but it didn't matter. There was no way I was going to stop now. I was going to save her if it was the last thing I did.
"No,"
I whispered, but as the word left my lips, I felt something else. The ground. Everything inside me seemed to splinter into indescribable agony before being extinguished by unending darkness. Chapter 29.
"Wake up, Mac."
Ricky sounded distant as she shook me like a Polaroid picture. My head was throbbing. Why wouldn't she leave me alone?
"Don't you die on me."
"Die? Why would I die?" I tried to murmur, but I couldn't make my mind or my mouth work. The last thing I remembered was trying to keep us from crashing into the cement after our impromptu skydive. If she was shaking me, it meant one of two things. I'd succeeded, or I'd died. And if she was asking me if I died, well, I must be alive. As that realization settled over my cotton-filled brain, my heart leapt into my throat. That meant she was alive, too. I'd saved her. Thank God.
"Mac,"
Ricky cried, wrapping her arms around me and pulling me to her chest. The warmth of body pressed into me. And as my eyes opened, I realized she was next to me on the cement, pulling me against her.
"Didn't you get shot?"
I asked. Horror flooded into me as I tried to sit up, only I couldn't. I could hardly move at all.
"Don't talk, Mac. You're in a really bad place."
She moved up next to me and kissed me hard on the mouth, filling me with the taste of blood and something else. Power. She tasted of power. You need to take some of my strength to heal yourself?
But you got shot. And Pierce. Where's Pierce?
I moved, and stars flashed across my vision. Mac, Pierce is dead? Ricky laid across my body, so a lot of her skin was touching my bare chest. A wave of relief crashed over me as warmth filled me. Now lay down.
How do you know?
I whispered, settling back down, mostly because she was pushing my head back. The sky above was very blue. She pressed herself against me again. I couldn't tell you why, but the skin-to-skin contact made me feel a lot better. Was she forcing power into me somehow? I know he is dead because after I dug out the 2 silver bullets out of my stomach with my bare hands, I ate him. Well, most of him, I skipped the liver. She smiled at me, baring her teeth. Bits of meat clung to her braces. He was already dead when I ate him, though, because he fell out of a plane. Even the most powerful werewolf in the state doesn't survive that kind of fall. She gestured down her body. I'm only alive because you saved me. She pressed her head against mine and reached out to intertwine her fingers with mine. Now stop being a hero and take some of my power so you can heal yourself before you bleed out. I wanted to argue with her, wanted to ask a million questions, but the look on her face made me stop. I'd seen a look like that before. It was the same look Ricky had given me when she had spoken about her abducted brother. That look told me one thing. Ricky would give anything to save me. What did that mean? Maybe there's really something to this whole imprint thing. Okay, I said, gripping her closely, and just touching her was enough to make me feel like I could have fought off an army. Sorbio. Strength and energy exploded through me, magnified tenfold by our full-body contact. My flesh mended itself in an instant, and my vision snapped back into focus. Power and energy surged up inside me, too fast and too furious for it to be good. Ricky's body convulsed as she drained into me, and I didn't stop. As her eyes slowly shut and her forehead fell limply against my chest, the only thing I could think was, I wanted more. No, not just more. I wanted all of her. Every last drop. I would drink her dry. No, I cried, forcibly ripping my glowing hand away before I could tear every ounce of life from her body. The scarlet light surrounding us faded away, leaving us lying there on the asphalt in a pool of sticky crimson. Ricky's eyes fluttered open, and she flashed me a tired grin.
You didn't eat me?
Thanks, she whispered, smiling at me as she got to her feet. So you want to hit the hotel before or after we see Dwayne? I'm voting for both, personally. She held her hand out to me, and there was a strange edge to the look on her face, like she was trying to play off the fact she was really worried about what Dwayne would tell us, that everything I felt was just a result of her imprinting on me. As I opened my mouth to tell her not to worry about what Dwayne found with his stupid druid tea, something in my pocket buzzed. We both turned our gazes toward it, and I realized it was my radio. I wasn't sure how it had survived the fall, but I reached down and grabbed it. There was a blue light flashing, and it buzzed again. I hit the call button. Hello? I asked, confusion filling my voice. Both Todd and Pierce were dead. Who could be calling me?
Mac? I have someone who wants to speak to you,
Todd said, and I marveled that he was still alive. He had more lives than a cat.
Okay, I asked, trying to figure out who it could be. I thought you were dead.
Oh, I didn't die. As soon as those guys shot me up, well...
The voice changed to that of the black clown who had seared the number into my brain, the one responsible for taking my family hostage.
I showed them my true form.
Laughter filled the line.
You did well, Mac. I have it on good authority from Death himself that Pierce is dead.
So my part of the deal is done, then, I replied, still trying to make my mind work. This was way too much for me to deal with right now. I just needed to lay here for a bit and get my bearings, and then I could deal with him. Still, this was my chance to get him to release my family, and I wasn't going to squander it just because I'd fallen out of an airplane.
Indeed it is, he paused ominously. But here's the thing, Mac. You possess a very particular skill set which will cause me a great deal of trouble if I do not have the appropriate leverage. I'd offer to keep your family safe in exchange for you continuing to perform dirty jobs, but somehow I think you'll tell me to go fuck myself.
You're very astute, and if you harm even a hair on their head, I will find you and I will kill you, I told the radio, hoping he wasn't going to renege on our deal. Not after everything I'd been through. It hardly seemed fair.
Oh, I believe you, the voice said. That's exactly the problem.
Mac? Ricky said, and I glanced at her to see her pointing into the sky over the theme park. A helicopter very similar to the one I'd punched out of the sky was heading toward us. Fast. The only difference between then and now was that this one appeared to be filled with zombies.
What the fuck are you doing? I screamed into the radio. Oh, you've seen the welcome party.
The guy chuckled into the radio. The sound chilled me to my core.
Don't worry, Mac. After they kill you, I'll let your family go. Devil's promise.
The line went dead. What do we do? Ricky asked as we got to our feet. We had less than a minute before they were on us.
We run,
I said, grabbing her hand and looking for cover. There was an overpass not too far away. If we could get to it.
And then?
She asked, as we sprinted past where what remained of Pierce Ambrose was splattered across the asphalt like a bad piñata.
Then I punch a helicopter in the face and we kill us a demon in a clown suit,
I said as the M5s on the helicopter began spitting out bullets.
Do you think you can throw me that far?
The street exploded into fragments of debris, and I knew for certain, even though it was only 10 feet away, there was no way we were going to make it. Fortunately, we didn't have to make it, because a frigging bolt of lightning erupted out of the cloudless night sky and blew the helicopter to smithereens. As it exploded in midair and pieces of debris rained down all around us, Danton stepped out from beneath the overpass and dropped his cigarette to the ground. He smushed it out with the toe of his work boot and looked up at us.
Why, if it isn't my old friend Mac Brennan,
he said, holding his right hand out to me.
I hear you've got a demon problem.
This concludes Marked by J.A. Cipriano, narrated by James Patrick Cronin. Copyright 2016 by J.A. Cipriano. This unabridged audiobook is recorded by arrangement with Jason Cipriano and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.